You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Traditional song, gotta love it. Best part is now we can talk during the song and not just have to play over it.
I like listening to the song. I like letting it play.
It's an OG. It'll never go away.
Better than when we were ripping off the Ram songs.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to the four in attendance and the thousands listening around the world, let's get ready to draft. It is the Left Coast Gamblers draft preview show. We've done this every year. We've been a podcast. The OG host of the Left Coast Gamblers, the Left Coasters podcast, is the man, the myth, the legend, Brian the Ballerina Balzerini. Not only is he a great host, not only is he a great graphic designer, but he also is a draft prognosticator. And this man does a big board, whether we want him to or not. He will be doing this in his basement for the rest of his life. He does a big board for the draft every year. And every year he gets more of these correct than Mel Kiper, than Daniel Jeremiah, than anyone else you can name. This man knows what is going on. So it is my pleasure as Tony Cavallo, along with Matthew Dangles, D'Angelo Antonio, along with Schaefer the Sharp, Drew Schaefer Crixton, to welcome back to the podcast, Brian the Ballerina Balzerini. Welcome back, buddy. Oh, give us a cheer.
Thank you for having me, guys. I mean, is that the
Charlie Chaplin acknowledgement? I love the Balzerini.
Good stuff.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate you guys having me back. And I mean, it wouldn't be draft season without a mock draft or two and some opinions thrown around about it. So thank you for having me.
I can't wait. I can't wait to get started. We're going to do a mock draft of the first round. The Ballerina is going to give us all of his picks, all of his predictions, all of his trades, and he's going to lead us through this. And then me and the other two idiots are going to debate and see if he's right. So before we start, Dangles or Drew, you got anything to add?
No, man. I'm excited.
I can't speak for everyone, but I mean, how about actually watching a live event as it's happening in real time? Everyone is starved for some action. So even though it's going to be much different, Mr. Goodell might have a chubby in sweatpants in his basement, but still, we're going to see something going on. So, I mean, thank God for that, guys.
I did read something that would make me appreciate Roger Goodell if he did this, but if he went up to the podium at the start of this while he's filming it in his basement and he had his like wife and daughter start booing him, I would actually like Roger Goodell.
Okay, yeah. Cool. That might win him a couple of points with me, yes.
For sure.
It would. I think it's a genius idea.
In a viral world, that would go, that'd go off.
I don't think he has a good enough sense of humor to do that, though.
Absolutely not. Ballerina, before you tell us the first pick, you got anything you want to say about how you attack this or if there's any differences with this draft than drafts in the past?
Well, other than the obvious, I think the most interesting thing about this draft is that when you consider the fact that a lot of teams haven't had the interviews that they normally have, so a lot of teams will be going off of their tape and their interviews and they should have enough information, but it might make teams a little bit more conservative. It might make teams work a little bit harder to prepare their trading ahead of time. But that's pretty much the main thing that I'll be looking for. So I took that into account when we did this draft. And for the viewers and for you guys, the average change of pick in the first round is around 9 per year. So when you think about each year, year over year, there's about 9 picks that transfer hands. And then this year, going into the first round before the draft, we already have 6. So you're looking at around 3, maybe 4. So if you're a betting man, you're looking at around that number for trades this first round. So I tried to incorporate that. I had about 3.5, 4 this year on my radar, and ended up leaning towards 3 or leaning towards 4 specifically. So I'm excited to see what you guys think.
All right, let's do it then. Let's jump into it. Let's start off with the first pick of the 2020 draft, brought to you by Brian the Ballerina.
Without further ado, the first overall pick, the Cincinnati Bengals select Joe Burrow, quarterback, LSU.
Pretty obvious.
No surprises there.
No surprise.
Pretty obvious.
Now, do you think there's any – I mean, before you get into – I mean, you know, I think everybody, it's been talked about over and over again why, you know, Burrow, there's obviously those people who detract, you know, against his arm strength, but he's got leadership. He's got all this – he threw for 60 freaking touchdowns and led his team to a national championship. I think he only threw 6 picks. So you see that accuracy is there. But do you think there's any chance that the Bengals might trade down, say, with a team like Miami, who is also jonesing for a good quarterback? And maybe Cincinnati says, well, Joe Burrow is real good, but we're not married to this guy. Maybe we can get some extra capital out of this and still end up with our future starter in somebody like a Tua Tagovailoa if they trade for Miami and end up at the third pick.
Sure. I mean, to be realistic, though, the owner is not that type of guy. Brown, he's not the type of guy that goes back off his first-round draft picks. So you're basing this off of tendencies. Let's not kid ourselves. The Miami Dolphins have everything they need to dominate this draft. They have all the draft capital in the world. It's very uncommon to have 3 draft picks, similar to what Oakland Raiders had last year. And what did Oakland do? They were the ones setting the pace for this draft. So to answer your question, I don't think the Cincinnati Bengals move off. Do I believe there's a high chance of that? No, I don't think the Miami Dolphins can make a – it's funny to think that the Miami Dolphins, who were tanking for Tua – ended up pulling it out by the end of the year and giving themselves the 5th overall pick and completely screwing themselves out of the 1st overall pick, which frankly wasn't even going to be Tua more than likely. So I think they like Joe Burrow a lot. The zeitgeist is telling us that Joe Burrow is straight in the Miami Dolphins sight. But as far as moving off, the Cincinnati Bengals know what they have, and they have a tentpole for the rest of their, you know, 10, 15 years, at least the Zach Taylor, you know, head coaching, 10 years. So, you know, they get what they want. They get to start over, and they get to go back into the second round and pick a guy that might support him, a right tackle, another player that frankly, you know, can help them. So I don't see them moving off, and I think them staying with Joe Burrow.
I love it. Joe Burrow, the Bengal. I love it. Let's move on to the second obvious pick, number 2, Washington.
With the 2nd overall pick, the Washington Redskins go with Chase Young, Ohio State. You're not very surprised. I guess what's interesting is that when you think about Washington, they're one of those teams that need a lot of help. You know, they have a lot of points of need. Their offensive line needs help. They can use another wide receiving target. They can use some help on defense. But ultimately, when you look at a guy like Chase Young, and you know, pass rushing is still a premier position in this league. You don't pass up on a guy who ranks higher than Joey Bosa or his brother. So you don't move past a guarantee like that. And I think with Ron Rivera taking over for the Washington Redskins, he's looking for that tentpole defensive player, and he's not going to pass him up. Although there are going to be people who are going to give him great offers, I don't see any one of them living up to that hype to move up to number 2.
Yeah, no need to get cute at the top here. Just do the right thing, do the smart thing, and then you can focus on maybe spinning, say, a Trent Williams into additional picks down the road, because he obviously, we know where things stand with him in that franchise, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them turn him around into some extra draft capital on draft day.
And this now, is Drew, I think Chase Young is one of your favorite players.
Who's that?
Drew, I know Chase Young is one of your favorite players based on where he went to college.
No, I mean, I think the Ballerina has a dead nuts here. Not gonna spend too much time on the first 2, and I think this is where the draft starts, pick number 3. So I'm curious to see what happens now.
I'm curious too, Brian. What do you got?
With the 3rd overall pick, the Detroit Lions, although they entertain every trade in the world, ultimately come to the conclusion that they cannot fall out, rather pick up draft capital, yet still pick a premier player. So they stay put, number 3, and pick Jeffrey Okuda, Ohio State corner, and secure their much-needed, hole-ridden defensive backfield.
Well, it replaces Darius Slay, who obviously went to Philadelphia, and they need an anchor in that secondary, and Okuda seems to be, leaps and bounds the best cornerback. Although I think hasn't there been some question about him kind of in the weeks leading up to the draft. There's the other cornerback from Florida, Henderson, right, who's also been talked about as maybe the best secondary player in the draft.
When you look at Jeffrey Okuda, everybody kind of accustoms or compares him to a player like Patrick Peterson. He's just a guaranteed Pro Bowl player. And, you know, I think because the draft has had so much time and easy criticism to sit back and poke holes in every prospect, I think Jeffrey Okuda is just one of those guys that, like, he's a foregone conclusion, top cornerback, easy plug and play. Potential pro bowler. I just think people, you know, are nitpicking. He's exactly what the Lions need. He's a man-to-man guy. He can easily drop back into zone coverage. He's also one of those guys that tackle, and he's a hard worker. He's everything you want. And frankly, when you look at a lot of the statistics, there's a reason to believe that great coverage is better than great pass rush. And in the Lions' case last year, they had neither. And if you're going to shore up one thing, it might as well be the defensive backfield. Now, Drew, I'm curious, as a Detroit Lions fan, you don't seem too excited. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was going to say, you gave the thumbs down.
Yeah, so I don't like picking a guy that you can get at I don't like picking Okuda at 3 when you can get him at 6. And I just feel that this is such a prime position for Lions to trade. They haven't been in a position like this in a long time. So, Brian, as you said, they're already entertaining offers. Quinn had said he's taking calls from numerous people, which leads me to kind of my first best bet of this draft process. I want to do a disclaimer on these bets. Usually you have your standard sports book. You can go to it. You're going to have to shop around for these bets all over online, Fox. But these are stuff that I'm pulling from Twitter. But a bet I love is you can find it at Plus Money right now for the quarterback to be taken first on the board, Justin Herbert over Tua. I think the Chargers are really hot over Justin Herbert. The Dolphins, unless they're sending a bunch of smoke screens, they love Herbert. Herbert's been a combine darling, and people knew that coming in. Now, Tua, obviously we know the hip injury, but he's broken his wrist. He's left-handed. He scored a 13 on his Wonderlic, which I'm not going to put too much, you know, I'm not going to put too much really, you know, emphasis on that because Lamar Jackson scored a 13 on the Wonderlic. Look what he did last year. But I do think this is a prime example. As a Lions fan, I'm so disappointed if they take Okuda here with the third pick, because I really believe if they trade back 3 spots with the Chargers, they will be able to nab him at 6, or Derek Brown, or Isaiah Simmons, or somebody. So that's the reason why I would be disappointed with them taking Okuda in this position. Again, not the player, just the position that he was picked, if that makes sense.
You know, it's a great thought, but – what's coming out of the, again, the zeitgeist is that the Lions are not getting what they want in compensation. They don't want to fall out of the top 6. And sure, when you look at the needy teams out there, the Miami Dolphins and the Los Angeles Chargers, they may not be as needy as we think, because when you look at the fact that the word's coming out that at least 2 teams in the top 10 have flunked Tua Tagovailoa, sure, over medical grades, and that Justin Herbert isn't ready to start. I don't think there's an emphasis, unfortunately, in this top 5, as much as we'd love to believe, in moving up and getting a quarterback. When you look at the Miami Dolphins, I think they're strategizing and they're looking at different options that they have of moving back up and moving back around. When they create scenario analysis, I don't believe that they're going to find that the best route for them is to move up, knowing how much they need. And when you look at the Los Angeles Chargers, unfortunately, the Los Angeles Chargers are one of those teams kind of built to win. And is Tua Tagovailoa going to play this year, likely starting off and beating out Tyrod Taylor? I don't know. And when you look at Justin Herbert, is he ready to come in and start and take over the league? I don't know. So I don't think the Los Angeles Chargers, the Miami Dolphins, are clamoring and willing to give up all that draft capital that it's going to require to move up to number 3. And I think the Lions are just going to be in a position where they're going to have to make a hard choice and go with the best player available. Unfortunately, to you and I's dismay. So I would love for them to go out and get some draft capital, move back up in the first round, maybe in the right time. So that's where I land on it. But welcome back, Tony.
Oh, I'm back, baby.
It's kind of – well, but, you know, before we move on, I mean, there is also the possibility that the Chargers don't even look at a quarterback at all. They stick with Tyrod Taylor because Anthony Lynn is a running guy. I'm sure he knows the importance of having a mobile quarterback and what that opens up for you in the run game. I could definitely see them going with a guy like an Isaiah Simmons. But let's move on to the fourth pick. Tony, I know you're just getting back. We were just finishing up our discussion on Jeff Okuda and the Lions, and Drew had been talking about maybe a possible trade, getting the Chargers moving back where they could still get Okuda at number six and getting spinning that into something extra. Any thoughts on that?
No, because I think we've spent as much time on Jeff Okuda as will be spent on him in his career. So let's move on
to number four. It's the New York Giants, who went 4-12 last year. Dave Gettleman gets his first pick at number four. Who does he go with, Brad?
Well, Dave Gettleman's 9% overall success rate over the course of his
career. Pick me, Atlanta.
Selecting rookies both at Carolina and New York. He's going to go with the easy pick here, and I think it's going to be right tackle Tristan Wirfs of Iowa. When you look at him as a complete prospect, he's a guy who's played on the right side of the offensive line. He's played on the left side of the offensive line. He's played both. Now remind our viewers that our listeners as well, that the New York Giants have sunk a lot of money in this offensive line and have picked up capital across it and already have a starting left tackle. So, you know, they might be looking for scheme versatility over a pure left tackle product. And Tristan Wirfs provides that. He's actually the Big Ten offensive lineman of the year out of Iowa. Kirk Ferentz is known for being a offensive line guru. Tristan Wirfs is the only player to start as a true freshman for Kirk Ferentz. So you look at that pedigree and you look at his combine numbers, he's a freak. He's an absolute freak. And that's what Gettleman goes after. And I think Gettleman's going to look at different offers and he's going to entertain moving back because he wants more, as most teams do. But why pass up a good thing in protecting Daniel Jones in the future and getting a kid that's only getting better, has improved every single year in his grading, both pass and run, and he's the complete prospect. And I think he's a slight edge over some of the other prospects at tackle, which we'll see.
I like it. I like it a lot. I think that might be the first smart thing Gettleman has done as a New York Giants general manager. I like that a lot. Let's move on to number five.
At number five, now the Miami Dolphins, as we've talked about their needs, you're looking at quarterback, offensive line, safety. They have so many needs across the board. But what they do here is they stay put, and draft Isaiah Simmons, linebacker, Clemson. Now, why did I choose this? Why do I see this happening? When you look at Isaiah Simmons, we all know, we've all heard all the comparisons to no one, right? That he is second to no one in his ability to drop back into coverage as a safety, to cover as a nickel, to be a linebacker, to rush, to tackle. I mean, he's all over the place. We've seen him in national championships just blowing people up. And so when you look at his versatility, I think Brian Flores, the offense, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, look at that type of player as kind of their Jamie Collins and then some. That kind of guy who can come into your team, cover your blind spots at safety, a little bit at nickel, and even rush the passer and drop back as a linebacker. I mean, he's everything that you want in a complete player for a team that has so many needs, and that's why they stay put.
That makes a scary secondary there with the, you know, Byron Jones and Xavien Howard. You add him in as somebody who could possibly drop back into coverage. You're looking at a very, very strong secondary there with Rashad Jones as well, who's also a very, very good safety in his own right.
And why you're not looking at a quarterback here is because this is my theory, and this is what we talked about earlier. My theory is that when you look at the Miami Dolphins, they know what they have in the quarterback position throughout the rest of the draft. Get the best player available, then go back and get the value at the quarterback position with those other two picks. And you know, not to get too far down the line, but I think Miami Dolphins are playing the long game here. They know they control this draft. They don't have to rush up and grab anybody and waste draft capital that they need so much. So that's why I had them staying there.
Huh. I like that a lot. I love Simmons. I think he's a game changer immediately.
He looked good in that white. He looked good in that Miami white.
Yeah. Apparently, you know, his game video, he lines up at five different positions: outside linebacker, inside, free safety, strong, and slot corner. He can do it all. I mean, this is a guy, you know, he's a plug-and-play piece into any defense that any coordinator would be lucky to have. And I think it's interesting that they don't pull the trigger on the quarterback right away. I mean, you know, it's very similar to if they follow how the, you know, because the Oakland Raiders did the same thing last year. They very much controlled the first round of the draft, having three picks to spin around. And I think you see the Dolphins try and follow that blueprint and turn it into some success this time as well.
And not to belabor this point, but just remember where this draft is really deep: offensive tackle, wide receiver, safety, and maybe even corner, if you depending on how many guys you like. So when you look at their needs, they're built for this draft. They did their scouting ahead of time. They knew what they were looking for. And I think they realized that no matter who their quarterback is or who the quarterback they want, he's not an instant starter. He's not a guy that's going to come in day one and beat out Fitzpatrick right away. He might be somebody that comes in later on. So is it a good place for a quarterback to land? Yeah, but I don't think the value is there when it comes to when Simmons is sitting on the board.
I like it. I like it a lot. Let's move on to number six there, Brad guy.
At number six, we have the Los Angeles Chargers. Drew, I think you hit it right on the head, my friend. Hit it right on the head. I think if the board shapes up like this, I don't think they have any choice. I think they select quarterback Tua Tagovailoa out of Alabama.
Wow.
Why I think Tua and not Josh Herbert? I think Tua is one of those guys that they can afford to take. When you look at the Los Angeles Chargers roster from top to bottom, they are one of the most built teams to win right now. Right now. They have depth on the offensive line. They've got great linebackers, underrated offensive line. They've done enough. And Telesco has had a really good track rate. When you look at the Los Angeles Chargers, he's hit on 10.9% of his rookies. The average is 10 in the league. Average is 10. So he has done above and beyond a better job. And I think when you look at Tua, what does he bring to the Los Angeles Chargers? In a new stadium, in a new city, competing against the Los Angeles Rams, you bring in a guy, a Samoan from Hawaii, who, you know, community of fans who have grown to know Junior Seau, it makes complete sense to me. He's a high-caliber guy. The Philip River era of high-caliber accountability, you know, getting people motivated, it makes sense to me. I see an overlap there that makes sense, and I think they're willing to take a chance on it because they can afford to take it slow with Tua. So I think Tua is their guy.
Well, I will say I did think Tua would get drafted by the Chargers potentially, but remember the first best bet, Tony, I'm not sure if you caught it. I'm betting Justin Herbert to be selected before Tua in the draft at even money. So I guess based on your board here, Brian, I would have the Chargers select Herbert just because he is kind of like the prototype pro. Tua's got the injury concerns. And here's a fun fact. Last left-handed quarterback to throw a touchdown in the NFL, Kellen Moore. That threw me
off.
So, I think Tua's stock is kind of plummeting. And with this COVID thing, I mean, no one has been more negatively affected than Tua here. He can't get into the building. He can't take the meetings. The really bad Wonderlic score, he really can't even address that. So I do think, while I agree the Chargers might select him, like I said, I do think Herbert will go before him. So based on your board, I'd have Herbert here. But Tua is definitely he's the biggest question mark for me in the draft. And he could be an all-pro. He could be a complete bust. Very, very fascinating to see what he does at the next level.
So I have a question for you three because I've been pondering this myself. We obviously don't know Tua's hip, but we've seen a lot of both of these guys in college. In the NFL, if you had to pick who was going to have a better career, Tua versus Herbert, who would you pick and why? I'm going with Tua personally because I've seen Herbert and I just don't see it. I see a Blaine Gabbert. I see a guy that can play in the NFL for 10 years, but I don't see a guy who's going to change the NFL. Tua has the ability to do things that not a lot of people can. I would go with Tua. Tony GM would go with Tua, but what do you guys think?
Well, I think I'm on record as saying, you know, look, Tua, you know, he played with probably the greatest receiving core in the history of college football. I mean, he played pretty much with three Pro Bowlers at Alabama with a superior offensive line, with superior coaching. He had every advantage he could ever, you know, want. So Herbert here is obviously a combine darling. That doesn't mean anything, as we know. Blaine Gabbert is not a bad comparison, Tony. But I know that around the league, sources are really high in Herbert, and the question marks are just too much for Tua right now, given that he can't get in the building. So as I'm saying here right now, if you want a hot take, I would say Herbert. I would put more stock in Herbert as the better pro long-term over Tua right now. Huh. Obviously, this is the draft. It can change, you know, week one, year two. It doesn't matter. But right now, I'm definitely taking Herbert over Tua.
Herbert is 6'6", by the way, and 236 pounds, which is something you can't teach at that position. Obviously, you know, talking a lot about Trevor Lawrence being 6'6", and obviously a little bit more mobile. You know, it's tough. I feel like I'm going to lean more a little bit towards Herbert myself. I mean, two is a big question mark. The injuries scare me. The Wonderlic score scares me from a leadership standpoint. But then again, Herbert has never left Eugene, Oregon in his life. He grew up there. He went to University of Oregon. Like this is the first time that he will be ostensibly leaving, you know, Eugene, Oregon. So it makes me kind of wonder how he'd fit in a place, you know, like a Miami. He'd probably be more comfortable along the West Coast. I think I'm going to go with Herbert here. I think he's the you know, just the more physical guy. He's got a great strong arm, you know, I think his preparation shows.
To answer your question, Tony, I think I would go with and I hear all the criticism, especially about the medical, which I you know, nobody can argue against. I think when you're talking about the investment it takes on in a quarterback, if they're not on the field, they don't do you any good. And with that in mind, though, I still take Tua, because what Tua did at Alabama, you don't see very often. You just don't. You don't see that kind of leadership. You don't see that kind of kid who comes on a campus and changes the culture of a program. You know, we talk about ceilings and floors, right? When you talk about a player's potential versus where they're at right now. And if you get the best out of Tua, you're talking about a perennial Pro Bowler.
I mean, it's one thing to step in and steal a job in college football. It's another thing to do it at Nick Saban's Alabama.
What culture did you change at Alabama?
Well, when you look at the quarterback position for out of Alabama, they haven't had a track record of bringing guys into the league who have just excelled at the quarterback position. It just doesn't happen, right? Tua Tagovailoa is a divergent player from that position and that prototype in Nick Saban's offense. I mean, he came in and he took that position away from a guy who's going to be drafted in the second round. You know, and he didn't just do it. He came in as a young man, and people said, this guy's different. What he's doing in the practice, on the practice field, that it's not normal to do that. And when you're talking about a room of alpha males at Alabama with wide receivers, tackles, everybody, he was the unprecedented leader in that locker room. If you're the Los Angeles Chargers and you're looking for somebody to set the tone and I have nothing against Justin Herbert. I think Justin Herbert's a fantastic kid, and I think he's very intelligent wherever he goes. But when you're talking about ceilings and floors, I think the ceiling of Tua Tagovailoa is Drew Brees-esque. His floor, yeah. His floor might be closer to a player that you know, you may not think of in the top 20, but I certainly think he's a starter in this league even when he's not at his best. And I think the opposite of Justin Herbert. I think when Justin Herbert's at his best, he's a Tannehill type player. I think at his worst, he has the capability of being a
Brock Osweiler.
Yeah. Well, I think he levels out Justin Herbert.
No, seriously. I think that's the kind of court. I mean, we got a big guy here who everybody's talking about is potentially good. That, you know, again, 6'6", that could very much be a Brock Osweiler. But all right, we've spent a lot of time on it. Let's move on to pick number 7. It's the Carolina Panthers, who went 5-11 last year. Who are they taking, Brad?
So with the Carolina Panthers, you're looking at a team right now who, by the way, think about what just happened, right? Justin Herbert's still on the board. There's phone calls blowing up the Carolina Panthers. They're looking at trade offers. They're you know, the GM, Marty Herney, who, by the way, has a 10.5% success rate. He's doing very well over the course of his career. He's got to make
their biggest needs right now.
When you look at their needs, I think linebacker is a huge one. I think seeing Isaiah Simmons fly off the board just drop their stomachs. But you look at cornerback, you look at interior, you look at defense all around. They got to get better. They just have to get faster. And I think the Carolina Panthers see an obvious click there. And unfortunately, they don't get the draft value. And I think a lot of teams who are trying to clamor and move up, maybe potentially get into that discussion for those left tackles, don't necessarily meet the threshold the Carolina Panthers are looking at. So I think they stay put. And I think they go with Javon Kinlaw, defensive lineman from South Carolina.
Wow, okay. A little earlier for him. A lot of people have him going more closer to like 9, 10, Jaguars, Browns kind of area. But he flies off the board at number 7 to the Panthers. Very interesting.
Yeah, I think when you look at who could go off at this point, I think you look at Derek Brown, the defensive tackle from Auburn. I think you look at I think it's a little high for another corner. It's a little high for another linebacker. So you're looking at what they need, and they need defensive linemen terribly bad. And right now, Kinlaw is the best combination of pass rush and run stopper. Derek Brown, unfortunately, he's a one-trick pony. He's more of a run stopper than he is a pass rusher. I mean, you're in a league that you got to stop Drew Brees. You're in a division that has to stop Atlanta. So you need a guy who's going to be just dominant. And you got to remember, this guy showed up to the Senior Bowl where the best talent is playing, and they shut him down after 2 days because he was doing so well, and he didn't play in the game. You know, so he's one of those guys that everybody's talking about, everybody wants to to him on his team. And I think the Carolina Panthers, they get a hometown kid, and they just run with what they know. and they sail off into the sunset with a cornerstone for the rest of their team. Remember, they lost most of their D linemen in free agency. It's just a good fit.
A large cornerstone at 6'5", 325, too. A very large one.
Absolutely. And you got to remember, this kid's just getting better. He just started playing football not too many years ago, and it's getting better every year. It just makes complete sense.
I like it. I like Brown, the defensive lineman you just sort of ragged on a little bit. I think he's a game changer, but I mean, I'm surprised he does not go here. But again, I do not ever question the ballerina. Let's move on.
At number eight, we actually have ourselves a trade. First trade of the draft. We have Arizona at trading off their pick to the Miami Dolphins, who move up and give their number 18th pick and their number two second rounder at number 39. So you're looking at a complete swap of those values. It evens out, and no matter which trade value chart you use, Miami Dolphins move up and use their draft capital to select Josh Herbert, quarterback, Oregon.
Justin Herbert,
excuse me.
Interesting.
I like it. I think he's going to the Dolphins at 5. I like him here at 8. I love the pick. I love the trade. Good trade, Dolphins.
Think about what just happened, right? We're all thinking the Miami Dolphins are going to jump up. They're going to get with the Detroit Lions. They're going to give up their second, their third, their, you know, whatever. But they're sitting there going, why do we have – we're in control. Nobody's – you know, you got to remember, this year is very rare. There's not a lot of teams that want quarterbacks, right, in that top 10. So they don't have to panic. They can use their draft capital that they've accumulated and move up. Once they get off that best player available, as Isaiah Simmons, you're walking out of this draft with Isaiah Simmons and Justin Herbert. That's a W.
I like it a lot.
And think about this. The Arizona Cardinals, they don't have a second-round pick. Guess who they gave it to? The Houston Texans for Hopkins. So they're eager and willing to take on that second overall pick and move down a bunch of spots. Because remember, this is a deep tackle class. They can go down and draft at 18 and still get a potentially starting left tackle or right tackle. They're happy where they're at.
I love it. I love that move by them. Miami would be very happy for the first time in a while. And, again, that division is ripe for the taking now that Tom Brady no longer resides there. What do we got for number 9, Bryce?
Number 9, we've got another trade.
The
Jacksonville Jaguars, who are looking to move down, they have one of the worst freaking teams ever compiled. They need as much help everywhere. So they're willing to move down, and you've got a team who's willing to move up and have equal trade-off value, and that's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tom Brady's Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They move up, and they draft Jedrick Willis, tackle, Alabama.
I was waiting for these tackles to start coming off the board. There's a lot of them. What makes Jedrick Willis the one that goes before the rest of them?
He's probably the most ready. He's probably the guy that you just – day one, you pluck on your right side, and now he's not a left tackle. So that's where his value kind of slips a little bit, whereas Tristan Wirfs played both left tackle and right tackle and has a kind of an upseam. Jedrick Willis is what he is. He's a Pro Bowl caliber right tackle today. And I think when you've got Tom Brady, and you look at that offensive line, right tackle is a huge need. I think it's obvious. I think they try to get ahead of those other teams like Cleveland and New York Jets who are looking at the tackle position, and they go, hey, We got to pay to play, and right now we got a 2-year window to win a Super Bowl. Let's get the guy who's going to go Pro Bowl within 2 or 3 years and protect Tom Brady. It makes the complete sense. And now, you know, when you look at what they give up their second round draft pick. Is that high capital for them? Probably, but what they get in return for Tom Brady, it's invaluable.
Yeah,
I think we can all agree the Bucs are on a 2-year plan. So
yeah,
I think they're willing to sell high this draft and next year's draft because of the GOAT that will be behind center for at least 2 years.
And then next we got the Cleveland Browns. I think we're going to round out this top 10 with a no-brainer here. I think the Cleveland Browns, who need left tackle terribly bad. They had so many problems across their line to protect Baker Mayfield. I think they're going to go with Andrew Thomas, left tackle out of Georgia. Here's a guy who just he's another guy, Tony, who you can put on the left side and potentially have a Pro Bowl player within 2 or 3 years. And he's played both left and right at Georgia. He's been fantastic, and I think he's a guy that Cleveland is excited to get and plug and play right there and have a guy that keeps Baker Mayfield standing upright for the next 10 years.
And Brian, I push back. Why him and not Mekhi Becton out of Louisville?
I'm glad you asked that question because I was ready to answer that, Drew. Mekhi Becton is one of those guys where, frankly, he played in a funky offensive scheme. He played a lot of quick bubble screens. He didn't have a he didn't have a complete pass rush skill set. He's not a guy who's used to who's dropping back, you know, and holding blocks for 10 seconds while the quarterback's in shotgun. That's not how Louisville works. So when you're looking at Mekhi Becton, physical freak. He's a guy immediately who you play on your team, and you have no issues with him at run blocking. He throws people left and right. But when you're looking at him as a pass blocker and you're the Cleveland Browns, I don't know if you're going to give him more value than a guy who's tried and true, all SEC, all right, everything in the last 3 years. I don't see the translation. Although Becton is a guy who will go pretty quickly, I don't think he's the bell of the ball.
I like it.
That's why I brought up the question earlier about the first two tackles you drafted and why I think one of the guys that traded down from a spot in your mock draft is the team to go for Becton. So I'm interested to see where he ends up. Let's move on. Well, we have 10 or 11?
We're at 10, so let me recap those 10 for you guys. So right now we have the Cincinnati Bengals and Mike Brown select Joe Burrow. Washington Redskins select Chase Young. Detroit Lions, Jeff Okuda at 3. 4, the New York Giants, Tristan Wirfs. 5, Miami Dolphins. Isaiah Simmons. 6, Los Angeles Chargers, Tua Tagovailoa. 7, Carolina Panthers, Javon Kinlaw. 8, trade, Miami Dolphins, select Justin Herbert, QB. Number 9, Tampa Bay Buccaneers move up to get Jedrick Willis from the Jacksonville Jaguars. And number 10, Cleveland Browns, Andrew Thomas, left tackle, Georgia.
So number 11.
Out of the top 10.
There we go. Number 11, we got the New York Jets. Now, an interesting team right now. I think the New York Jets need help in 3 key areas. In order, I think they are the offensive line, wide receiver, and corner. Now, look at what's on the board right now. We haven't seen a wide receiver go off the board. I think the New York Giants are in the hardest position in the draft at this point right now. They have to make a decision to go for one of those key potential all-everything wide receivers, or kind of, you know, keep the trend of get those left tackles coming off the board. I think they eventually go left tackle, and I think they're going to go Mekhi Becton, Louisville.
There you go. I think it's a really wise pick. I can already see it in New York. This is the Jets are going to take hell for not taking one of a sexy receiver, especially if Judy's on the board, if CeeDee Lamb's on the board, if Ruggs is on the board, as you project them to be, Brian. But I do think this has got to be the right pick. You've got to protect Darnold. And I do think whether it's not going to be sexy, but I think it's the right pick. I cannot wait for the New York media and the Jets fans to go crazy in Goodell's basement, obviously, because there's no live audience. I like the pick, and I think it's a good pick.
I like it too, but Becton I had going to Arizona just because of exactly what you said. The scheme he played in Louisville matches the scheme Kingsbury wants to run. Get the ball out quickly and have people that can move on the field laterally, and Becton fits that. But, again, trading out is a smart move for them too. I like Becton going to the Jets because New York would hate it.
This kid ran a freakish 5.142, by the way, for a guy who is like 6'7" or something like that, 345 pounds. That's just scary. The kind of speed.
6'7", 365.
I'm sorry. I was 20 pounds short. 365. That just messed up that a man that large could run a 5.1. Like, again, you talk about things you can't teach on the offensive line.
If you're talking about value at this position right now, at number 11, to get your starting left tackle potentially, that's huge. That's huge for the New York Giants or New York Jets. And when you're looking at where they might want to go and pass up Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb and Henry Ruggs, this is a deep wide receiver class. They might get their starter in the first round, and they have draft capital elsewhere. They've got third round picks too, I believe. They can move up in that second round and try to snag a guy that might sneak out of the first round. So if you're looking at value right there between the two positions, it's a no-brainer.
Well, Brian, you've kind of set this up interestingly because you just mentioned wide receivers, and this next team coming up on the draft board is in desperate need of a wide receiver. Now the question is, do they get skittish and see wide receivers falling and try and snatch up the top receiver on the board here at pick number 12, the Las Vegas Raiders?
I think it's pretty obvious. I think when you look at Mike Mayock, they have a premium on excellent players coming from a pedigree program, and I think it's a no-brainer. It's a great match for both need and skill set. I think they go with CeeDee Lamb, wide receiver, Oklahoma. Ooh.
Wow. Interesting. See, I thought, you know, it's a coin flip. It was honestly, it's a coin flip between Lamb and Judy here. I think you can see them going either direction.
Why I gave the nod to CeeDee Lamb over Jerry Jeudy or Henry Ruggs or anybody else you might like. I think when you look at CeeDee Lamb, he does something that I think the Oakland Raiders, and mind you, he's a Hopkins cut type player. He's that kind of guy. He's going to get good separation, but when he doesn't, and inevitably he won't because he's fast, but he's not elite fast. He gets physical and he gets open and he takes chips very easily. When he runs across the middle and he gets hit by a linebacker, which he's going to get hit a lot when he's in the NFL. He stays on his route. Unfortunately, when you look at guys like Jerry Jeudy, who's an elite player on his own right, he's not a guy who does well physically. He's a guy who does well. He's never physically getting manhandled because nobody can touch him. But ultimately, in the league, when that talent gap shrinks, a guy like CeeDee Lamb is ready to come in, play, and play at a high level. And he's a high caliber guy, and I think he fits well into what Oakland wants to do, or rather, what the now Las Vegas Raiders want to do on offense.
The reason it threw me off, Brian, is because when you're talking about Mayock and Gruden's just affinity for these classic programs, I assumed you're talking about Alabama, obviously, with them drafting Josh Jacobs in the first round last year. It turned out to be a great pick. I don't think you can miss with any of these three receivers. I think Ruggs might be the best of the three. However, I do think if you're asking, Jeudy is – I got to watch him play a lot, unfortunately, in college, and there's something about him that's just special. And everything you said is right about the difference between Lamb and Jeudy. I don't think you can go wrong with any of the three. I'd be very interested to see if Mayock and Gruden will take the Oklahoma kid over the two Bama kids. We'll find out, but I love the pick.
Yeah.
Who's next? More of these wide receivers have to fall somewhere.
They do, and I think next is the next one in line. We got the San Francisco 49ers via the Indianapolis Colts. I think if we remember correctly, they traded.
This was the DeForest Buckner trade.
Yep. So Lynch is sitting here right here, and he's got a great track record of drafting at around 8% success rate. I think he's here for a reason. He traded this for a reason, and he wants a playmaker, and I think he's going to go with a scheme fit that fast. Under route, can blow by you in the deep routes. I think it's Henry Ruggs all day, wide receiver, Alabama.
This would make me so mad, Brian. This would make me so mad if they got Henry Ruggs, because that's exactly what they need. You're exactly right.
It's a great compliment to their wide receiver core right now. It's what they don't have. And I think Henry Ruggs, when you want to compare him to somebody, I think Tyreek Hill is the easy comparison. Yeah. It's, imagine a Tyreek player who comes from a pedigree of Alabama who might be better coming out of college than Tyreek. I think he comes into this team, and I think he absolutely makes them even more dangerous than they already are with their wide receiver core. Debo Samuel, I think the world of him. Yeah, I was upset when my Lions didn't pick him in the second round last year. This now all of a sudden turns into the most dangerous team in the league, in my opinion.
God, I hate it. You're so right. I hate it. let's move it along. Unless you got more on Henry Ruggs.
Yeah, there we go. What's to say that already hasn't been said? I think this is where things start getting interesting. Now we're at number 14. This is where the Tampa Bay Buccaneers traded off, and now we have the Jacksonville Jaguars selecting. And they sit pat. And they get rewarded. They get rewarded for moving down and reading the tea leaves and knowing where teams were going to sit. And they sit there and they make the easiest draft pick in the world, and that's Derek Brown, defensive tackle, Auburn.
Wow. Wow. I mean, it fits Marone's scheme. He always goes D lineman and he just loads up on him.
Well, but they need the thing that is, too.
They need everything. They need wide receiver help. You don't think Jerry Jeudy is a better player in the long run than Derek Brown for this team?
I don't, because I think Jerry Jeudy is a better player than Derek Brown if you want to compare a wide receiver to a defensive tackle and try to square that circle. But I think the other thing that you have to take into account is Derek Brown is a premier run stopper. Premier run stopper. He might be better than most run stoppers that have come out in the last couple of years. What makes him a better prospect, in my opinion, is the value where you get him. If you're looking at Jerry Jeudy right here, and rightfully so, you're comparing him versus the other five or six wide receivers that could be available in the second round and be available to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Remember, the Jacksonville Jaguars moved down out of this Tampa Bay spot. They've got two, three second round picks right now. So you're looking at a team that's locked, loaded, and can do anything they want after that first round. I think they get the guy that when they walk out of this draft, they go, we got a game changer at defensive tackle who has a high motor, who plays every down, who may not be the most polished pass rusher. We can develop that, and we can put him in situation. But right now, he changes our team overnight. Jerry Jeudy would be a nice pick, but I think they can still get that wide receiver that fits nicely into their receiving core. Remember, Jacksonville's got a pretty good core when they're healthy. You know, I don't think they're pressed as much at wide receiver as they are at some other positions.
I agree. I like this pick a lot. Not only, you know, it does fit Marone's scheme, but also just for the Jaguars. Look, they gave up so much. We've talked about this on the podcast before. They've given up so much on the defensive side of the ball over the last few years, whether that's guys that they've let walk, guys they've traded away, and in Calais Campbell, obviously, where now the only guy they've got left on that front four is Yannick Ngakoue, who they put their franchise tag on.
Who they might be trading.
They need someone, and I like this pick because Brown is such a freak at that, and his first step is so fast at that position. I agree that they're good on the wide receiver side of things. I like this pick for Jacksonville. I think it's a smart move for them.
And think about him, Dangles, comparing with Josh Allen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You got Josh Allen on the edge and him on the interior. I mean, they've spent a lot of capital over the last few years on defensive line. They drafted Tavid Bryan out of Florida as well a few years ago. So they've got young guys that they are planning to line up. But it is, I mean, regardless, you know, what this team needs right now is thick boys. Defensive line, offensive line. Thick boys are what are necessary for the Jacksonville Jaguars right now. Absolutely. Thick with two C's.
I like that a lot. Let's move it along.
All right, next we got the Denver Broncos. I think this is the easiest decision John Elway has ever made in his tenure at the helm of the Denver Broncos. By the way, he's got a 1.6% success rate as a drafter. He's not a very good drafter at all. Ouch. But we're going to make it easy for him. We're going to make it super, super, super easy for him. The number one need they have is wide receiver. It's Jerry Jeudy all day.
So Jerry Jeudy Jerry all Jeudy. Day. Okay.
They'd be very happy with that.
That duo over at the Denver Broncos.
I'm curious because obviously they have a great outside guy in Sutton here and the best slot guy, and Judy's fallen this far, and obviously he'd be great value. But I'm curious, would Justin Jefferson, because he plays in the slot, be a better fit for the specific scheme in the Broncos versus another outside threat in Jerry Jeudy?
That's a good call, but you got to remember, Jerry Jeudy played every route. He played every route. He wasn't just a deep guy. He wasn't just an over-the-middle guy.
He's
he wasn't underneath.
He's got a full tree for sure.
He's everywhere. And if you're the Denver Broncos, you're not passing on Jerry Jeudy.
15, oh, my God.
Pick up a singular, you know, one-trick pony. I think Jerry Jeudy gives you everything and then some. And I think you just got Drew Lock. Drew Lock just got a gift from God himself and said, your career is going to be maybe okay, who knows, but it's going to be a lot better because of Jerry Jeudy. And I think the Denver Broncos are dancing, handing that or calling that pick in to Roger Goodell in his basement.
If Jeudy fell to 15, I would be dancing too if I was a Broncos fan.
Yeah, that'd be a huge pick for them. Absolutely. Huge pick for them. All right, we're halfway through, right, Bri?
Yes, sir. We're halfway through, and I think we're rounding the corner here with the Atlanta Falcons at number 16. Now, the Atlanta Falcons are in a unique position right now. I think their phone's blowing up, but I don't think they pull off. I think they stay where they're going to be. I think the Atlanta Falcons, who have a serious need at corner, now, mind you, they gave up Desmond Trufant to the Detroit.
There's one pick here that makes sense.
To me, it makes the most sense, and I think it's the healthiest. All across the board, these guys, this guy has been named as the number two corner in the class, and that's C.J. Henderson from Florida.
I love the pick. I think that's exactly it's the smartest thing. It fits the need. They need help in that secondary. He's the best corner out there. Yeah, getting rid of Desmond Trufant was tough for them. I love the pick here. It's smart. 6'2", 204. He ran a 4.39 40. He's very, very good on the back pedal from scouting reports that I've read. I love the pick here for the Falcons. It fills that need.
And for context, Thomas Dimitroff, the GM, he has one of the highest success rates in drafting players at 14%. I mean, he's a stud. The guy's a stud.
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
He's one of the best, and I think he adds another piece and component to that defense that now, by the way, has first-round draft picks at every starting position on the offensive side of the ball. I think going defense is a clear no-brainer.
It's a need.
It's a clear need, and I just think it's a great match.
I also think Atlanta is advanced in this draft because of the situation we're in as a nation right now. A lot of these older GMs and a lot of these older staffs, I should say, I feel like there's going to be technological difficulties, as you've seen in the Left Coast Gamblers podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Guy like Dimitrioff and young GMs around the nation are going to fare better in this build than, like, the Ozzie Newsoms of the world. I know Newsom's not there anymore, but you catch my drift on that. Mm-hmm. We got to move on the rest of these picks, Brian. Let's go to 17.
All right, number 17, we've got the Dallas Cowboys sitting there, and they receive a phone call from the Minnesota Vikings that they cannot turn down. The Minnesota Vikings are moving up. Now, mind you, the Minnesota Vikings have two first-round draft picks, and they have two glaring holes at corner and wide receiver. The reason why they're moving up is they see value at this position and right here and right now, and only have to give up their third-round pick at 89 to move up. Why the Dallas Cowboys move out of this position? They don't have a lot of value right now where they're picking, and I think they can pick up the player that they need and they want later in the draft, and they only got to go down a couple spots, count it four right now, so that it's an easy pick for me. I think the Minnesota Vikings move up, and they fill a huge void at corner, and they pick Jalen Johnson, Utah cornerback, who's, by the way, fun fact, probably my second or third favorite player in this draft. Guy has scored a 90 overall PFF rating at corner the last 2 years at Utah. Super physical, super good. I think there's a lot of teams that are hoping he slides. And I think the Minnesota Vikings, looking at the next couple picks, who look at the Las Vegas Raiders, who are looking at the Philadelphia Eagles, who are looking at these teams who need picks, and they don't waste any time. I think they move up. They get an instant starter. Mike Zimmer loves those physical corners. And I think my Lions, your Packers, and the Bears are cringing at this, knowing that they've got an instant impact corner coming to the Minnesota Vikings.
Interesting. I like the thought process behind it. Minnesota, I hate Minnesota. Move on.
And they move all around all the time.
Yeah.
Next, we've got the Arizona Cardinals finally picking. Mind you, they traded with the Miami Dolphins and out of their position and picked up some draft collateral that they didn't have before. I think it's obvious to me right now that tackle is still a huge issue for them, and yeah. I think it's a no-brainer, being that this guy graded out really high, and they get the guy that comes in right away and plays, and that's Josh Jones, left tackle out of Houston.
A lot of big boys. A lot of big boys in this draft. A lot of thick boys, as Dangles likes to say.
I think this is a pretty easy one. I think Josh Jones could easily be in that kind of floating category of being maybe the fifth left tackle or maybe even the fourth best left tackle. Had an insane year out of Houston. He's got to get better at his pass sets, but he's got it. He's there. He had one of the best clean quarterbacks in the conference. And I think ultimately when you look at what the Cardinals do is they have a player in their quarterback, Kyler Murray, who have a similar scheme that the Houston Cougars run. It makes a lot of sense to me.
All right. I like it. Moving along.
All right. Next, we've got the Las Vegas Raiders, who picked up their second-year pick out of the Khalil Mack trade.
Yeah, this is the Mack trade. Yep.
I think this is a great fit. We kind of go back to great fits. I think this guy fits a plug-and-play need for the Las Vegas Raiders, who are picking for the second time, and that's the Christian Fulton, cornerback out of LSU.
Obviously, we have a lot of opinions on that pick, Brian.
A lot of us seem to know what to talk about. So,
no, it's okay.
I was looking at him I'm just poaching Kuiper's mock here, but Kuiper has him going in the second round. Brian, why do you have him so high on your board?
He's a very unique guy. I think some people are going to love him. Some people are going to hate him. One thing that this guy did that one metric that really stands out to me is his ability when the ball is thrown to balls that are thrown on target, this guy is one of the best corners at breaking up. When you look at across the college football landscape, you see corners who aren't competing against first, second, maybe even seventh round quarterbacks and wide receivers. This guy matched up really well against really good receivers. Now the problem with Christian Fulton, he's a terrible tackler. Doesn't want to tackle, refuses to tackle. So that might be why he's sliding. Oakland or the Las Vegas Raiders, they're one of those teams that don't care. They fit scheme. They get their kind of guy. And Christian Fulton was a five-star prospect who came to LSU, who started as a freshman and just kicked shit in.
And tampered with a test for performance-enhancing drugs, it looks like.
He spells Raiders all day.
do you really think they? I guess yeah. I agree on one hand, but just to play devil's advocate, after the whole thing with Antonio Brown last year, don't you think they're tired of drama?
You got to remember,
not the Raiders' way.
You got to remember, very true. There's a scale system of what to worry about, right? When you look at the Las Vegas Raiders and their culture, and that's even just recently under Gruden. Their last year, their first round pick, Adams, the safety,
Jonathan Abrams,
excuse me, he's a mouthy guy. You know what I mean? He's been in trouble a handful of times, and they're not afraid to pick guys who have track records of being difficult. But ultimately, what they're looking for are gamers, people who show, who play, who do the work, and he did it, at a high level throughout his entire career.
Now, Brian, as we're running out of time here on the podcast and what we can put on the old interwebs, the audience listening at home, we will have Brian's full mock draft, even if we don't get to it here, on our Instagram page in a nice little graphic that Brian will likely create and is just learning about now. But let's rifle through the end of this draft here, Brad guy.
Let's rock and roll. So next pick, we've got the New Orleans Saints trade up and trade into this position and trade with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
One question. This is what spot?
This is going to be the 20th overall pick.
Thank you.
20th overall pick. The New Orleans Saints trade with the Jacksonville Jaguars, who moved down to their pick later in the first round, and they move up to pick their favorite linebacker at Patrick Queen, middle linebacker out of LSU.
He's a beast. I'm surprised more people aren't talking about him. He amazed me in every LSU game I saw.
Yeah, it's astonishing how complete he is as a player. Now, granted, it's only 1 year's production. Devin White, last year's first round draft pick, was the starter ahead of him, and it took him some time to get up to speed. But when he got into speed, nobody was better than him. And I think the New Orleans Saints, who have the luxury of having the best, deepest roster, can move into that position and get an instant starter for the next 10 years and then some.
I love that pick. I love that pick. All right, moving along.
Next, we got the Philadelphia Eagles. The Philadelphia Eagles, Howie Roseman at a 7.5% success rate pick. Justin Jefferson, wide receiver out of LSU.
Makes sense. Like that pick.
They need the help. They need the help either at corner or wideout, one or the other.
To point out Drew's comment earlier, the slot aspect of it, he walks in right now and completely just takes over that slot wide receiver position for the Philadelphia Eagles, who get all their wide receivers back healthy, and I think he just complements everything that they do in that offense.
Another guy I would have liked to see fall to Green Bay. You keep on taking him, Brian.
Sorry, buddy. Next, we have the Dallas Cowboys via the Minnesota Vikings. The Dallas Cowboys select Cesar Ruiz, center, Michigan.
Nice. I like that. Great pick.
Why
Travis
Mike
Frederick? That's why.
That's why. 100%. 100%. The retirement of Fredericks is a huge gaping hole, and while they could pick up a corner here, I don't think the value's there. And I think Mike McCarthy would love a corner because he loves drafting corners. But Cesar Ruiz is, to me, the most complete center, shifting guard. And I think he comes in and he immediately solidifies where they put their money, and that's Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott.
Now, when they drafted Frederick, they caught guff for drafting him too early, saying they could have gotten him at a later pick because center's not that valuable. I asked the same question here. Is Ruiz valuable enough to be taken now?
He's as valuable to go as high as 20, in my opinion. But I think what sets him as a good site in this mock right now is that Dallas knows what they have. They know what they want. They're another team that's pretty deep. And I think they could pick up a corner here. They could draft out of this position. I don't think anybody's going to really run up and try to take it from them. But I think they get what they need, and I think they get what the ethos of their team is, and that's just hella blocking all over the place and keeping in spirit of their winning record.
All right, 22.
At number 22, we have the I think this is 23, Tony. If I'm
23.
There we go.
We have Dangles as New England Patriots sitting here pretty.
Very interested to see what you do here, Bri.
I thought about this, Dangles, for you for an extra 20 minutes. I wanted to get this right just for you.
Well, there's a lot of things that could happen here because right now Jordan Love's still on the board.
I think this is the I think this is a match made in heaven. And if this guy gets picked, Dangles, I think you should be happier than a pig in shit, my friend. I think with the needs they have at this position, I think they pick Zach Braun, edge linebacker out of Wisconsin.
I love it. I love it. This is one of the guys I was hoping for. If Patrick Queen, I think I have him a little higher on my board for that position. I'd love to see the Patriots take Patrick Queen because of the speed he brings to the linebacker position. But Zach Bond is a guy who I've seen on a lot of experts' draft boards, who I've seen the beat writers in Boston talking about. I'm very excited about that pick. We need help at the linebacker position after losing Jamie Collins and Kyle Van Noy during the offseason and Landon Roberts. I love the pick. It's a great one here.
We talk about versatility when we talk about New England and Detroit and Miami, and we talk about that coaching tree. This guy is about as versatile as you get. He's a guy who's dropped back in coverage. He has a 90 overall pass rush. He stops the run. He does everything. He's a high caliber guy. Wisconsin's known for having great linebackers. I think he's just a great fit for Bill Belichick and what he's trying to do. I don't think they trade out of it. I think they would like to trade out of this position, but I don't think there's enough teams with the amount of depth on this who are willing to give up draft capital.
I don't know. I mean, I thought about it too, and I don't think Belichick's going to do it because he doesn't typically. He's not going to draft up for. I think from everything I've read and heard, he's happy with Stidham and Hoyer as his options, and that's what they're going to do this year. I mean, would it shock me if Jordan Love is still on the board at this point? They went with him. Not so much because he at that value, what they could potentially get out of him, he's real good. But don't be surprised. I mean, we already know what their relationship is like with the Lions. Don't be surprised if they maybe try to package like a Joe Tooney and a first rounder, third rounder this year, and maybe one more pick next year to try and move up to three if they're really ambitious. Or I would say maybe look at them to maybe trade like a Marcus Cannon or a Dante Hightower. Again, these are guys who are sort of like veterans. Patriots are very good at trading away veterans like a year early. And I think that could be something you could see like a Hightower or a Cannon go to like Cleveland to get to 10 overall and either take Herbert or maybe spin that into another pick. Those were sort of the things I was thinking about trade-wise, but ultimately I don't think Belichick trades up for a quarterback.
Yeah, I don't think he does either, and I don't think Jordan Love presents you the value that you need. I don't think Jordan Love's a good fit for that offense. I see a lot of holes in his game, and I think he's an overhyped quarterback. I think he's a viable day two kind of guy that people are going to take a flyer on.
I think the versatility he brings could be a big benefit, but I just don't. It's not about Love so much as it is the positioning and the value that you get there for Belichick, and I think he would much rather, if he's going to trade, try and spin that trade into something where he can get like some second rounders out
and
of
like, it. I like your idea, though. I like your idea of the Lions coming back up. I was thinking about doing it, but I didn't want to do it just to not seem like a homer. But I think this is a very good space for the Lions to come back into play and pick up a right tackle that they need terribly bad, which we're going to see some tackles go off the board.
Absolutely.
Here. Next, we've got the Jacksonville Jaguars finally picking here their second pick of the day that they also traded out of. I think this is a home run. Home run. Xavier McKinney, Alabama.
Ooh. He's another guy I was looking at for the Patriots who potentially could go at that 23 spot.
If you're the Jaguars, you need a safety terribly bad. You now have a guy who could be your nickel, a guy who's going to be a leader on that side of the board, who has a lot of scheme versatility, and he's just a solid all-around leader. And I think that coming from the program that he comes from, he's going to be a guy that comes right into Jacksonville and has a good culture shift and also adds you another piece to that defense that you need so terribly bad.
We're getting to the good teams now. Now that Jacksonville's off the board, let's have some playoff teams pick players.
Next, we've got the second pick of the Minnesota Vikings at number 25. Again, I think this is another obvious need and a good fit. I think Jalen Reagor, wide receiver, TCU, is a great fit for the Minnesota Vikings. And I would be terrified as a Detroit Lion fan to pick him up because, unfortunately, he's a guy who's slipping because he had a terrible 2019 year, but he also had a young quarterback throwing to him. His 2018 tape, out of control. So when you look at how he's done in the past and you think about his scheme fit, the Minnesota Vikings have a clear plug-and-play wide receiver and a replacement for Stephon Diggs.
Really hating how good Minnesota's getting through this draft. Keep it going, Bri.
Next, we have the last pick of the Miami Dolphins. I think they have a clear need at tackle, and I think this is the right place to start picking up that right tackle. I think they go Ezra Cleveland, offensive tackle, Boise State. He's that guy who's been on the cusp. I think they can go the right tackle out of Georgia here. Insert right tackle right here, and I think they're going to be happy with whatever they get. So think about what Miami did. They got Isaiah Simmons. They got Justin Herbert. And now they got a starting right, maybe left tackle. I think that's a hell of a draft.
They're going to be very happy in Dolphin Land. Drew, we haven't heard from you in a while. You got any bets that we've missed of yours?
Well, I was going to comment on Cesar Ruiz, but I got shut down by Tony. So I'll just
try to move it along. We're already past the hour limit that we gave ourselves. We're just trying to end this show before midnight.
I love the Cesar pick. Obviously, I'm partial to him because he's a Michigan man, but he's the kind of guy, as Brian can attest to, you know, he's 21 years old, but he's going to step in that offensive line, experience offensive line, and show leadership qualities immediately. It's kind of the point guard of the offensive line. Great center, versatile guard. So that's one of my favorite picks. And I will get to a couple of fades of players after the conclusion of Brian's first round. I'm fading two players, and I'm betting one player under. So keep going, Bells.
Nice.
All right.
To keep things moving here, we got the Seattle Seahawks at 27. John Schneider, another great, not another great drafter, but he just manages to find guys in the second, third round. He's trading out a lot. I think they're going to stay put this year because we have a guy who's been flying, who's been dropping off of pick after pick, and he's still sitting there. And it's a clear need, an edge rusher, Kalavion Chase on edge rusher LSU.
One of my favorite names in the draft.
I mean, here's a guy that's very interesting. He has a hard time staying healthy. He's got really only, a year, maybe 2 years of really good production. He's pretty absent, unfortunately, when there's really good tackle play, but is pretty dominant otherwise. And I think he's a guy that comes into Seattle. You plug him right outside LJ Collier, their first-round draft pick last year. You got Bruce Irvin as a reserve. He's another guy who can teach this kid how to work. He seems exactly like a Seattle guy, a guy who gets injured a lot, but has a high potential for success.
That is a Seattle trope. That definitely is a Seattle tendency. All right, who's at 27?
All right, number 28, we got the Baltimore Ravens. I think this is a great pick. This is, to me, one of my favorite matchups again.
I like how Brian keeps patting himself in the back for the picks that he's making these teams make. I really appreciate that.
I'm the Baltimore Ravens. I'm rushing this pick in, and that's Kenneth Murray, linebacker, Oklahoma.
I was just about to ask you about him. This is a guy who's really highly touted, a physical freak. He's got a lot of good on-ball – who's got a lot of good off-ball skills, has some trouble finding the ball from some of the reports that I've read. But, yeah, still on the board now. I was kind of surprised he hasn't gone already.
I think it has a lot to do with the value he presents at coverage. He's not a very good cover linebacker. He needs a lot of work. He has a lot of hard time reacting. He's usually a reactive player, not a proactive linebacker, which is usually the testament of an insane linebacker. But Patrick Queen ahead of him, and maybe even at par a couple other players. What he brings to the table that no other linebacker, actually, frankly, no other player in this draft does, is the insane leadership. Kenneth Murray is actually the guy when you hear interviews of people at Oklahoma who talk about him, they say he's a transcendent player. He's the kind of guy that actually came in as a freshman and played. He was a three-star recruit, but came in immediately and changed the perception of his value right off the bat because of his leadership. And I think he's a guy that when you think about the history of the Baltimore Ravens and their middle linebacker pedigree, he's a guy that fits right in and actually is a huge need for the Baltimore Ravens as we speak right now.
All right, Brian, I'm ready. I'm ready.
The next pick is the 29th pick, the Tennessee Titans, Tony.
God damn it. Come on, Brian.
Tennessee Titans sitting here pretty after having a pretty good year. Not a lot of holes, but I think this one, to me, is a great fit, and I'll explain why, and that's A.J. Epenesa, defensive end, Iowa.
I like him.
He's a guy that I think like he fits really well. Who he's best compared to is the defensive end for the Detroit Lions, Flowers. He's a guy that has that similar kind of skill set. He's not exceptional at any one thing, but what he does really well is he sets the edge. He gets pressure. He's not a very fast guy, but he's a very physical guy. And I think he's a prototypical defensive end for that Bill Belichick scheme that's over with Mike Vrabel at the Tennessee Titans, and a clear need that they have to go against last year's first overall pick, Simmons. So I think they fit a really nice need. They can go corner here, but I think the value of AJ Epenesa, who's probably a top 25 pick at number 29, is huge.
All right, there you go, Tony. Tony's now ready for the 30th pick, the Green Bay Acme Packers at 13-3.
Tony, similarly to my Detroit Lions and Dangles' New England Patriots, I gave you as much thought as I could physically put into. And again.
Thank you. I know that hurt you.
It hurt a lot, and I thought to myself, finally, what would be the guy that I wouldn't want to see in a Green Bay yellow and green jersey in Lambeau Field? And to me, this is my number one receiver on the board, and that's Michael Pittman, USC.
Okay. I hate USC, but okay, I'll take it.
Six feet, a number two receiver. It's that simple. You do.
Exactly. If he can contribute today, then I'll accept it.
6 foot four, 225. He's only dropped 5 balls in his entire career.
That's huge. And having a 6'4" receiver, just having that size, that physicality at the receiver position. I mean, you know, talk about some other guys at that height who come in at that height, 6'3", 6'4", Terrell Owens, Julio Jones, you know, Calvin Johnson, 6'5". If 5 drops at that size, that's freakish.
I've spent the past 4 years of my life watching now Detroit Lion Geronimo Allison drop every ball in the book. So I'll take a guy who doesn't drop the football. I would be very happy with that.
And what you're getting with him, Tony, is you're not maybe getting that guy like a Denzel Mims who just completely takes the top off of defense. He's not the type of guy that is completely going to, you know, be the deep threat all the time. In fact, he's probably not going to. But what he's going to be is he's going to be that guy that gets the underneath and the middle routes, you know, that 20 yards, 25 yards.
What I want.
And he's just going to rip it up. And I frankly know that when I see him up against Jeffrey Okuda for the Detroit Lions moving forward, I'm going to be watching that matchup for many years.
God, I love the future promise of the NFL. Go for it, Drew.
The ballerina. I was going to wait to the end, but the Pittman, Michael Pittman Jr. obviously has the lineage of a successful father in the NFL. He is one of my best bets, and he is actually, believe it or not, a guy that I am banking on. So I love that you have him in the first round. I see him all the way up here. There's actually a bet online you can make if he goes before the conclusion of the second round, believe it or not, Balzerini.
Woo!
Yeah, exactly. At minus 150, you pay a lot of big. Under 62.5, I have Pittman Jr. going under 62.5, of course. The ballerina has him 29th overall. No and way. I have a little sprinkle something on the Indianapolis Colts to take Michael Pittman Jr. with the first pick, 34th overall, at plus 2,200.
Wow.
Here for the sharp best bet.
Wow. Well, I mean, Brian's definitely going with your gut of the under 62.5. There's money to be made on that. I like it a lot.
I watched this guy play twice this year when the USC Trojans were playing on TV. I got to tell you, man, he lit it up. And
he's a baller. He can catch. And also, again, this is overrated, underrated. He is the highest Wunderlich score in the receiving class this year. Number one Wunderlich score.
All right, Brian, we got the Super Bowl teams left here. The 49ers get their second pick of the first round, and then the Kansas City Chiefs round it out at 32. So let's hit the Niners first. Who you got?
I think this is where we start seeing trades. I didn't project any right here right now because I think it's just so much up in the air. But if the San Francisco 49ers sit pat at this position, to me, another no-brainer, and I think a great fit, is Trayvon Diggs, cornerback, Alabama. I think he's a guy that comes in. He's Stephon Diggs' cousin, funny enough.
But one place they need help on the secondary, or rather on their defense, it's certainly in the secondary. Their front seven is almost perfect, but
he's going to come in with a chip on his shoulder. I don't think he expects to go this late, even though he's projected to maybe be even a second round pick. I think he is the type of guy that comes in at San Francisco, learns from my man there, cornerback Sherman, and I think he just fits right nicely into that scheme. He fits day one. He's the number two corner, potentially the number one corner down the line, and I think he just helps that team out right away. And now with the addition of Henry Ruggs and Trayvon Diggs at corner, you don't have any more holes, and you're the San Francisco 49ers.
Brian, I believe Stephon Diggs' brother, isn't he? Is he not? I thought they were brothers.
Maybe brothers. I don't know. I thought he was. I thought they were cousins, maybe.
Yeah, I'm thinking they're brothers. And if they're brothers, I mean, what better guy do you want in your backyard and Thanksgiving garden than that guy's kids, you know?
With the last pick of the fourth ever Balzerini Big Board, we go with the Kansas City Chiefs. What do you got there, Brian?
I think this is my hottest take of the eve. I think he is a guy that
I love that you waited until pick 32 for your hottest take of the draft.
This is where Super Bowl teams stay Super Bowl contenders. And I think look at the Kansas City Chiefs. They need a lot of needs on the defensive side of the ball. And I think this guy, even though he did not play a lot in his days in college, because of some off-the-field issues. Every time he played, he was the highest-ranked linebacker of this entire draft class, and that's Willie Gay Jr., linebacker from Mississippi State. He's a guy that comes in right now. Now, mind you, the Kansas City Chiefs don't have a starting linebacker on their team that rates over a 50 in the PFF score chart. So you're looking at a really bad linebacking core. Could use a corner. Could sit here with Cesar Ruiz if he's still on the board and fit some nice needs. But I think a guy that you take a chance on, if you're not drafting out of it or if you're not moving out of this pick, I think Willie Gay Jr. is a guy that I think the Cincinnati Bengals in the next pick are going to be looking at. And I think he sits really nicely with the Kansas City Chiefs, who can bring him into the locker room and bring him into their culture. And they've got a coverage linebacker who can blitz and do everything. And by the way, was a 5-star recruit coming out of high school for the Mississippi State Bulldogs. I think it's a great fit for Kansas City.
Well, Brian, before we go, Drew, do you have any last bets to give us?
Yeah, so the two fades I'm going to go, guys, and again, I'm happy because Ballerina did not say any of them in the first round, but I'm going to fade T. Higgins here. You can find him as high as 25.5, and you can find him all the way up to no first round. I'm going to bet T. Higgins does not get drafted in the first round, which according to the Balzerini Big Board will happen, so I'm fading T. Higgins. Another guy I'm fading is Jake Fromm. Listen, I see him all the way from 44.5 all the way up to 57.5. I think this guy has the potential to fall the steepest in the whole draft. I think the one admission I failed to see in the Ballerina's Big Board was Jordan Love. Didn't have him in the first round. I think Jordan Love's a lock to go in the first round. And then after that, you get Jalen Hurts. You get Jacob Eason from Washington. I think Fromm's going to get lost in the shuffle, and I don't see him going in the first two rounds. So there's a guy that I'm going to fade. So in conclusion, I'm going under Pittman Jr., 62.5. I'm going over T. Higgins not to get drafted in the first round, and Jake Fromm. And I would definitely lose this one according to the Ballerina Big Board, but there is a prop out there, SEC players at an even 16 at minus 150 to get drafted from the first round. I am taking that under. I think Ballerina had about 28 in his first round, but I'm under 16 for SEC players. So those are my bets. And I would pay a lot of money if anyone on this podcast wants to take action on Jordan Love getting drafted in the first round. Just you know, since we're betting podcasts.
No, but I will take you against the Jake Fromm thing. Jake Fromm has third round pick by the New England Patriots written all over it. Brian.
He's over. So that bet would win then. Over.
Okay. I didn't understand your bet. But Brian, thank you again for all the hard work you put into this. You have dedication to this. You do the work, and we appreciate it. And you get paid off for it because most of the time you know what you're talking about. You are correct. Will you make us all smarter doing this big board? And because we are smarter, we make more money, and that's all that matters. So, again, for Tony Cavallo, for Matthew Dangles, D'Angelo Antonio, for Schaefer the Sharp, Drew Schaefer Crookston, and for the returning OG host, Brian the Ballerina Balzerini, that is it for the Left Coast Gamblers. That is it for the Balzerini Big Board, fourth ever edition. Brian, close us out, man. Give us our last words. Anything you want to say?
I think this is going to be the most different and unprecedented draft in the history, and I think there'll be 30 for 30s airing for infinitum when this is all said and done. I think this is going to be the most exciting draft. I think there are people – I've been invited to three draft parties from three groups of people who do not watch football. So I think it's fun and exciting, and I hope everybody at home enjoys it and catches up on the what I call the greatest reality television show in sports history. Millionaires be made and people be crying.
I love it. I love it. I love it. All right, for everyone here, stay safe at home, and I can't wait for Thursday. And that's it. Thank you for listening.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.